Hello and welcome to episode 71 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Ankita.
And I'm Dr. Meenal.
Dr. Viz. That's Dr. right, Viz. Guys. By the way, before we jump into the episode, we need to celebrate the fact that Meenal is finally a doctor.
Finally, after 6 years, Ankita has gone through a lot. We made it.
We did it. Because I feel like, you know how people who are there in the labor room with others feel like they went through labor as well? I feel like I became a doctor with you.
Yeah, Ankita, you had all the sleepless nights. I'm so sorry you had to go through that.
Yeah. Very emotional. Especially learning about tennis, miss. But back to the show. So, guys, after watching Dangal a few months ago, both of us were very excited to speak to Sally Roberts. Sally is pretty much the American version of the Dangal sisters because her upbringing wasn't easy. She had to resort to theft to survive during her childhood, but she didn't let any of that get in the way of her dreams. She joined her school wrestling club, and she was the only girl wrestling at the time in her region. And with the support of her coaches and teammates, she persevered and she got into the national and world championships medal table.
But after her wrestling, life hit her hard again, and she didn't make it to the Olympic team just by one place. But as we know, Sally is a very strong lady and a very strong woman. She pulled her socks up and she decided to serve in Afghanistan. Everything that Sally has achieved today purely is just an outcome of her perseverance throughout the difficult circumstances that life has thrown at her. And you will find out more about the struggles that she's faced, but the good news at the end is that she founded Wrestle Like a Girl, which is an amazing NGO helping so many young girls across the states, and hopefully in the future across the world too, to power their energy and enthusiasm into something like wrestling. So do tune in to find out about this amazing work and also how you could possibly help Sally too. So I'll stop talking now. You can listen to Sally's story. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show.
Welcome to the show, Sally. It's such a great honor to be speaking to you. We've been looking forward to this for such a long time after Lauren connected us. And Lauren has always been our mentor. So we know that if she connects us with anybody, they won't disappoint. And we really, really can't wait to speak to you today.
Thank you both so much for having me. Likewise, I am elated as we have our mutual friend, Lauren. She's been a phenomenal advisor to many women across the globe.
So, Sally, let's start off by telling our listeners a little bit about Wrestle Like a Girl and what inspired you to start this project.
Yes, Wrestle Like a Girl. We are an international advocacy organization for females within the sport of wrestling. And as we were initially founding Wrestle Like a Girl, as I was putting all that work in, I recognize that to simply teach girls the technical sport of wrestling, it's powerful, but it can have more impact if we start to really show these girls what it takes to start thinking like an elite athlete. So understanding the sport and performance psychology of it, what are the leadership component skills that get brought into being an athlete and being a teammate. And from there, our programming has grown so that we are teaching girls the technical aspects of wrestling, but we're coupling it with the championship life skills. So we teach girls how to overcome adversity, resiliency, how to control their anxiety. And through all of that, we're recognizing that we're able to, using sport and the influence and the power within sport, to really have positive second, third order effects, because we know that we're really helping to build future leaders.
And Sally, I watched one of your interviews earlier, and you mentioned that you got into wrestling because you were having some problems as a child, and you know, you had some behavior issues, and you had issues that you had to deal with, and you had a different outlet before wrestling. So can you tell our listeners a bit about that?
Sure. Growing up, my mother had been married 5 times, and I really didn't like being at home at that point in my life. So I would go out after school, and I would get into mischief. So I was shoplifting, breaking into houses, getting into fights, and I ended up getting picked up by the cops so many times that I was eventually given an ultimatum that I could either find an after-school activity or face juvenile detention, go to jail. And I use that as a motivator, and I tried out for all the traditional girls' sports. So that was volleyball, softball, gymnastics, and I was getting cut from all the sports, I was being told that I was not athletic enough. So here was this young girl that was facing some pretty dire consequences and was really begging for an outlet or being involved in an organization or a sport. And I was being told no. I looked at the list of activities, and back at that time, it was 1994, females that wrestled, it wasn't 100% accepted, but fortunately at that time I was being raised in Seattle, Washington, here in the United States, and it was far more liberal with their policies and their views on what women could do. So when I saw that wrestling was a no-cut sport, even though it wasn't actually considered the most correct thing for a girl to do at that point in time, my wrestling coach had no objection. So because of his inclusion and allowing me to participate in a sport that was non-traditional for a girl, it really changed the whole trajectory of my life. I'm the youngest in my family and the first to graduate from high school. I went on to college. I got an advanced degree. I was able to represent Team USA. I'm a two-time world bronze medalist for Team USA. And I've gone on and I've also served in our military in some pretty interesting and elite units like the Army's World Class Athlete Program. So I can look back and say, I've had amazing successes in my life. I now run an international organization that's becoming more and more powerful, and it's supporting and advocating women. But when I look back at what that one pivot point that changed the trajectory of my life was, it was that someone has allowed me to participate in a non-traditional sport like wrestling. So I always want to give back to other girls and women so they can have those same opportunities.
But when you were young and you had these problems, what was the emotion that was driving you to almost land yourself in jail? Were you angry? Were you anxious? Were you upset with how things were going at home? What exactly was the emotion going through your mind at that age?
It was all of those things. I didn't understand currency. We grew up, we didn't have money, we didn't have resources. And it didn't make sense to me how I was supposed to be able to buy things if you didn't have money. And so then what is the currency that's on a street? Well, it's theft, or it's having little street gangs. And that's what I fell into. That was a very comfortable place for me. And it was only through being able to give myself a positive outlet that I could even redirect that. So yeah, I was very angry. I didn't have resources. I was using the resources that I had, which was theft. And it was also finding other people that were in similar situations that didn't frown upon what I was doing or any of the behaviors that I had, because it was socially acceptable in the culture that I grew up in. That's how you were able to get ahead if you didn't have any other means.
And you mentioned that you were the youngest in your family. So can I ask about your siblings and what they were doing at the time?
Sure. I have two older brothers. My eldest brother, he had moved out of the house. He was in his late teens, early 20s, and had just started his job, and also started a family. So he wasn't around very much. And my middle brother, who's older than me, he was home, but he and I had such strong disagreements that we weren't very connected. So there was no one that I felt like I could really talk to about where I was at.
And Sally, I'm sure there are a lot of girls who you have worked with or you currently work with who may have gone through the same thing as you did. Because, physical activity really helps calm people down, especially when you're dealing with really strong emotional issues. And as a coach or as a founder of Wrestle Like a Girl, have you had the privilege to personally see girls you train change their behavior and grow?
Absolutely. One of the things that became very apparent to me was that girls and women who are getting in trouble with the law or starting to run into roadblocks about where they belong, they become what I've referred to as almost the invisible group. We always have ideas of how we handle young men and young boys that are getting into trouble, but we don't necessarily know how to handle women. And what do we do with those girls and women that have that fight and that tenacity and that grit? Well, the solution that I was given, and this is the solution that I offer to attendees at our camps, is to say, listen, if you want to fight, you can do that. But if you do it outside of the wrestling room, you'll go to jail, yeah, potentially. And if you're able to redirect that fight inside of this wrestling room and you let us help you figure out how to really get maximum impact out of that, then you can really start seeing some life-changing and some life-affirming benefits. And along those same lines, we have girls. We get funding. We have scholarships so that girls that have lack of resources, lack of means, that are really in a predicament, we give them scholarships so that they can come and attend our training sessions and our seminars so that we can envelop into a positive club, a positive experience, so they can really start to shape their narrative of their own lives in a different way.
You just mentioned how people look at boys differently when they're going through something and girls are treated in a completely different way, which reminds me that you were just 13 when you started wrestling and you were the only girl in your school to join wrestling. And I can't help but think about 13 when I was 13 years old. And that's an age when, you know, your body is going through so many changes. The boys are going through a lot of changes hormonally, physically. So did that ever make things weird or uncomfortable since you were the only girl there wrestling all of these boys?
In my experience and in my particular case, no, there was no difference because I already had such a fire. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, I was an angry girl, that being able to really exert my feelings through physical activity, that self-expression and combat, when I was competing against other people, I forgot about everything else. My mind went blank and I was really able to roll up my sleeves and do some internal processing. So when it came to any of the body changes that I was experiencing because I was going through puberty, or likewise that my peers were experiencing, it never came onto the wrestling mat, because once you truly start training and competing, gender becomes irrelevant. When someone across from you really wants to take you down or score points, it becomes almost a fight for survival instead of thinking about all of the reasons why you shouldn't be doing this, or what the body changes are, or whatever insecurities that you may or may not have.
But was there ever a culture or a way of thinking that it was shameful for the boys to lose to you because you were a girl?
Absolutely. And I just recognized at an early age that their problems weren't my problems. Mm-hmm. There were some boys that if they lost to me, you know what? It didn't matter. They lost to another athlete. There was other boys that really had challenge with it. And more so than the boys, I often found it was the parents that had a problem to say, oh, I don't want my son wrestling that girl. Well, if that was the case, I didn't care, because that wasn't my burden or my thing to carry. That was on them. And I was going to continue doing what I was doing because it made me happy.
Sally, I don't know how if you know about like the Indian culture in terms of sports. Like cricket is a big deal in our country, and I used to play with my brother just like in the park with his friends, and eventually I got really interested in it as well, and I wanted to play in a team. So I played in a team, and I played with boys. Obviously, there were no girls playing at that time, and I think as a young girl, I kind of expected the guys to be like, well, she's not good enough, so we'll give her the ball at the very end, you know, as a pity sort of thing. And that was fine, I think, to some extent, because what else can you really expect from like teenage boys? But for me, the most disappointing thing was that the coaches had a similar mentality. So even when we had to play a match, for example, you know, the coach didn't really step up and be like, well, Meenal hasn't had a chance, so, you know, let's give her a go. And I think that was the most disappointing thing. And even worse still, like I still see that sort of culture when I go back home, especially with a lot of the coaches. So when you were a young girl, were the coaches encouraging, considering that not many females were in the sport at that time?
I was very fortunate to have a very forward-thinking coach when I started wrestling in junior high. And one of the things that became very apparent to me was that in my practice room, that was my safe space. And regardless of how people on the outside perceived my participation or what they thought the reason I was a woman or a female wrestling in a non-traditional sport was, I didn't have to contend with any of those things. So the answer is yes. I grew up in an environment where I was somewhat inoculated because I was being very supported. Mm-hmm. However, there were certain personalities on the outside that had a fundamental disagreement with my participation. Mm-hmm. However, it wasn't my problem to deal with. That was their own issues on what they thought women should and should not be allowed to do. And one of the things that I can say is that as we go forward, what we do here at Wrestle Like a Girl, we're able to relieve those challenges for the future generations because we're creating a narrative where women can do anything, especially wrestle. And people are seeing the second, third order effects of what happens when girls and women get the opportunity to participate in the sport.
Yeah, but now that you are the founder of this community and you are also a coach, your students or your trainees' problems start to become your problems. For example, in some parts of our South Asian community, girls who even wear jeans are sometimes considered to be too modern, or they would even go to the extent of calling them slutty because they're wearing pants and not skirts or saris or whatever. So in most cases, a girl like that would never even get the chance or even get to the stage of wrestling in comfortable clothing like shorts. So have you ever had to any experience of overcoming a cultural barrier while communicating with either the girls or their families about wrestling or the attire that you wear while wrestling?
Yes, actually, we've been working on this quite extensively. There are some countries from the Middle East that have asked us to come and help support their programming so that we can grow female wrestling within their culture. Mm-hmm. And that meant that we have had to do a lot of behind the scenes public relations and conversation so that we can shape that narrative of why we want girls and women to be able to wrestle. But part of that is they, depending on where they come from, they have modesty issues that they really have to contend with. So we were having to work and help shape what the uniform looks like. And for women that have, that come from a Muslim culture where they have to have their skin covered up, well, that meant that we had to create a longlet. And there was a gal that's from Canada who is also from Iran, and she was able to create that. So it was nothing that Wrestle Like a Girl did, but we supported her in helping develop that so that we could use it for our own programming. But exactly what you're saying, which is there are certain parts of the world where we cannot just go in and say, we're going to start women's wrestling. Yeah. We have to have different conversations going in with parents, with the athletes, with government officials so that they know who we are and why we're doing this and what we want the results to be able to show via the athletes, but then also asking them what is it that they want, because being able to have that open-ended dialogue is where we really start to make headway.
So Sally, we obviously, because we have a lot of Indian listeners tuning into our podcast, we have some amazing female wrestling legends in India, and they were born and raised in a very traditional and a very small rural communities as well. Have you heard of the Fogart sisters?
Yes, I certainly have.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you have. That was a bit of a silly question. you know, there was a Bollywood movie that came out quite recently. And I think after that, a lot of girls felt really empowered to see them, you know, fighting to be on the world stage. So in general, do you feel like there's a lot of progress in the wrestling world, not just in the United States, but even in developing countries as well?
Absolutely. The conversation right now on the national and international stage is, how do we create more equality within all sports? The International Olympic Committee has created a mandate to say that they want 50-50 participation. And not just with every country, but with every sport. They want to see equality within the Olympic Games. And so when you start to have those leaders and those key stakeholders, and they're the ones that are starting to really shape the narrative, both developed and developing countries want to be able to participate. And what does that look like? And if that means equality, well, then how do we start to get down to the grassroots within all of the countries to explore what that looks like? So in regards to the sisters and the movie Dangal that has come out, that's...
Oh, great, yeah.
Yeah, that's been really powerful in helping to shape the narrative, because there's that notion that if girls can see it, they can be it. And if they have a movie that shows them that they can do it, it's going to be challenging and it's going to be hard, and there's going to be a point where maybe you're being asked to dress up like a boy or a man so that you can participate, then girls are saying, oh my gosh, I can do this too. I just have to be flexible in how I go about it. And as people become more and more adjusted to seeing girls and women do non-traditional things, then the norm of what non-traditional is starts to change. And now they're saying, wow, we're not just seeing a female wrestler, we're seeing a wrestler. And it no longer gets determined that it's a man's or a woman's sport, but it's a sport.
And Sally, is there a lot of funding from wrestling organizations, and is there like investment going into developing wrestling in these developing countries?
We are slowly expanding our programming. There are certain international aid organizations that find the value in what we do, and they're starting to support us more and more, which is helping us to expand. So we have a camp coming up next month that's scheduled for the Democratic Republic of Congo to go and teach wrestling and self-defense. We've been having conversations with entities within India to come out and start doing some Wrestle Like a Girl camps and clinics. And we've also been asked to go down to Brazil and Australia. So there's a few different places that have been asking for our services so that we can help girls and women understand where they belong within the sport, which is on the mat.
And do you get a lot of girls raising concerns about their femininity? Like, do they think that wrestling will bulk them up and make them more manly?
Yes, across the board. But it depends on where you are being raised, is what we found out. Mm-hmm. For some girls, they find that they really want to be very lean and very skinny because that is their idea of feminine, while there's other girls that really want to be very strong and they want to have a lot of muscles because from their culture, that's considered feminine. Mm-hmm. And so being able to say, I understand everyone's culture and everyone's perspective, and we're taking that all into consideration. We just want for you to understand that this is what, it's not about what your body looks like. It's about what your body can do. And if your body is able to lift the body weight of another human being, that's very strong and that's very powerful, because I'm sure we've all seen very skinny females who are participating in sport, or maybe they're models walking around, where you and I know they could do some things differently to be stronger and to be healthier. And on the reverse side of that, we see athletes that there's some things that they can do so that they can become more fit, so that they can have more endurance and they can wrestle longer, whatever their sport of choice is, they can participate in. But recognizing that wherever you come from, whether it's from really identifying with being very lean and very skinny or being very bulky and strong, to be able to find that middle ground and say, this is what a wrestler looks like, and there is no particular look, but it's recognizing that it's about what your body can do and really gaining that strength.
You know, Sally, when I was growing up, I was less than 10 years old, and in my neighborhood, we had a dance class and a karate class. And I used to see these karate kids just practicing at the edge of a park, and I told my parents that I want to do karate as well, but they put me in the dance class because, you know, physical exercise at the end of the day, go do your dance lessons. But there used to be this one kid in my dance class, and this was classical, you know, classical Indian dance. And she did both karate as well as dance, and it was, looking back, it is so sad for me to realize that both the teacher as well as some of the other parents would shame her for being more masculine or for not being as graceful, because there would be these steps where you would have to lift one leg up for, you know, gracefully for a dance pose, and she would do it in such a way that made it look like she was going to kick someone, and they would just shame her, saying that if you do karate,
that sounds like
yeah if you do karate you can't dance. But I just now, looking back, I feel like if she had been allowed to continue both these forms of exercise, be it dance or karate, her brain would have developed in a completely different way. She would have been able to compartmentalize both kinds of movements. She just had to be given a chance.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that. One of the things that I've found as I'm traveling and doing my work, it's that right now I'm finding, depending on where you live, our athletes have to be, they're very adaptive to their cultures, and getting them to a point where they can feel comfortable in their own skin, whether or not people like what they do or not, is very powerful, because there's going to be so many things that come up for women and girls across the globe to say, I want you to run for political office, or I want, or not I want, they want to run for political office, or they want a particular job, or they want to study medicine or engineering, or there's always something where girls or women are told they shouldn't be participating in that particular sport, that particular job, that particular platform. And for them to be able to find their truth in their own skin, that's really the most important thing.
So if you have young girls asking you all these questions, how do you discuss the femininity with them? Like, how do you tell them that wrestling isn't just for boys and girls can do it too, and that doesn't change who you are?
There's two things that we do, is that We have those very open and honest conversations. So whatever it is, whatever the topic is that they're running into challenges about, we sit down and we talk about it. It's nothing that we brush under the rug. So from the beginning, we have very direct and frank conversations. But then the second thing is that like with the Fogat sisters, we're putting it out there in a way so that girls, if they see it, they can be it. And they see me doing my advocacy. I'm a 2-time world bronze medalist. I've had a lot of success. And I'm able to wear dresses and skirts and I have makeup on and I can paint my nails. But that doesn't change the fact that I'm still a very strong, capable woman who's able to wrestle on a mat and feel very confident doing any skill.
And Sally, you almost made it to the Olympic stage. So when you started off wrestling and you were competing, what was it like during high school? If you were competing, I would assume you would be competing in very high leagues and national leagues. Were you able to balance that with your home life, considering that you had a tough, you know, you had a tough childhood?
In 2002, I got residency at the United States Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And once I was able to graduate high school and go and live at the Olympic Training Center and focus on wrestling full time, that was when my career just completely excelled. I went from being fifth in the U.S. to being a national champion and going and winning my very first world medal. And so for the way that my brain operates, I'm very good at attacking one particular thing. And then once I exhaust all of my desires and hopes and dreams with that, then I move on to something else. So when it came to preparing and training to make an Olympic team, that was what I did 100% of the time. And as my skill increased and I didn't have to spend as much physical and mental energy on really becoming the best, I was able to slowly start picking other things and incorporating that into my life so I could be a better and more well-rounded person. So I slowly started taking on graduate courses within academia. And by the time that I, in 2008, as I was getting ready to compete at the Olympic trials where I ended up taking second, I was a few classes away from earning my undergraduate degree, my Bachelor of Arts. And so it was something that I had to first learn how to master myself. And then I learned how to master myself and how I operated. Then I was able to add in wrestling. And as I was able to master myself within the sport of wrestling, I would slowly take on more. And what I found is that I have a capacity for work that most other people don't have, because I've learned how to master myself in multiple different situations that now my workload, people say, how do you do so much? And I look at it and say, this is an easy day.
Wow. So Sally, what made you, so you went to Afghanistan, you served in Afghanistan, and did you put your wrestling career to the side for that? Or so what was like the thought process behind that? Why did you go into Afghanistan, into the army, and why did you stop wrestling or put wrestling on a pause? For lack of a better term.
Yes, great question. In 2008, I believed with every ounce of my being that I was going to make the Olympic team. I ended up taking second, and for the sport of wrestling, only one person can go per country, per weight class. So that meant I was not going to the Olympics. I took second. And because of the amount of emotional energy and physical energy I put into making that team, one of the results was that I fell into a depression. And at that time, I was also married. And because of my depression, my husband divorced me. So within about a 3-month time span, I lost my Olympic dream and I found myself getting a divorce from my then husband. And sitting on the end of my bed crying for about 3 or 4 months, I finally said, okay, the only way that I'm going to be able to change my mental space is if I change my physical space. So living in Colorado Springs, there's a military installation here. There's actually 5 of them. So I'm surrounded already by military ideology. And because of that, I went to a recruiter and I said, I would like one of the toughest jobs that a woman can have and serve her country. And they said, well, that would be this job, psychological operations. So I agreed to join the Army because it was, in my mind, it was going to help me overcome that depression and some of the emotional setbacks that I had faced. And within a year and a half of being in the joining the military, I found myself on a deployment to Afghanistan. And what I was trying to do was outrun my feelings and outrun my sadness and outrun my sorrow. But what I really did was come face to face with it in a war zone. But the thing that was very powerful was that instead of it breaking me and making me cry and shut down, it really brought me to a whole new level that I can handle myself and my emotions, and I can be courageous and brave in a foreign country, in a war zone. I can still handle myself with grace and class. And in that moment and in those breaths when I was in Afghanistan, I was able to say, I'm not this big loser that I thought I was because I took second in the United States. I was a very good wrestler, and I could look back and get more perspective with it.
Wow, Sally, that's incredible. Wow. And speaking of strong women, we mentioned Lauren earlier, but just to remind our listeners, Lauren C. Anderson was on our show a couple of months ago, and she was one of the first ever women to join the FBI SWAT team. And she was also the first woman to come on our show and discuss the importance of safety and responsibility among young women, because she advised that girls should be constantly aware of their surroundings, that they should avoid taking the same route back home. They should play mental games of remembering what everyone around them in the tube or the bus was wearing, etc. So now you're teaching a form of self-defense, Sally, that not a lot of girls were encouraged to pursue when we were growing up, at least when I was growing up. So how do you think that we can encourage more girls from a younger generation to actively pursue self-defense on top of being aware of their surroundings and taking precautions?
One of the things that's important is to be able to find one club or one gym where maybe they're not saying, yes, we want you, but they're certainly not saying no and making it a painful experience. Mm-hmm. So finding a place for girls and women to go and learn wrestling or self-defense, we found that it's very successful, especially for girls, if girls are wrestling other girls, because that changes some of the moral challenges or the cultural and social challenges that some girls face. So one of the things that we've suggested is that if you're going to go and join a self-defense or a wrestling team, find a partner about your same size and your same weight that's comfortable doing that with you. So you always have the same gendered partner. Mm-hmm. And that just makes it a little bit easier. And beyond that, it's really important that we start getting more girls and women involved with coaching. So even if they don't know what they're doing right away, having that female presence in the wrestling room or in the self-defense room is going to be a reduction to some of those barriers to entry, because now you have a female coach that's able to have those conversations. And as she invests in her own knowledge and education, she's going to be a better and better coach. She's going to be that visible person that other girls see. And what happens is it usually takes one leader and that their partner, the first follower. And once they see those two people doing it and other girls know that they can come participate, the wrestling movement, the self-defense movement starts to grow.
Sally, you don't just teach girls how to wrestle, but you're teaching them the overall idea of what it's like to truly be a sports person. You have sports psychology, you have nutrition, hydration. So, you know, a lot of things are involved in creating an excellent athlete. And I believe that's what you want to create in your academy. Wrestle like a girl, you want to create excellence. And to make all this happen, it isn't just about you going in and training a couple of hours a day, but it's obviously you need a good team behind this. So how is your team organized to make sure all this happens? Not in terms of having a big group of people, but I'm sure you have a lot of girls who can achieve a lot more. So I'm sure you'd have to direct a bit more attention to them as well. So how have you organized your team to make sure that everybody gets a fair share and a share that actually makes sure that you create the best wrestler possible?
One of the things that we have been very conscientious to do is to elevate the girls and the women that are within the sport. So, for instance, in Brazil, we're going to go down and do some Wrestle Like a Girl Brazil camps. However, we have our ambassador, Aline Silva, and she's an Olympian from Brazil. So she's the face of the movement in her own country, and we're using her to help spread our message, because she is that influencer, that key stakeholder that girls from her country can identify with. So what we work to do is find at least one ambassador from every country that we can put out as the forefront, and we educate them, we train them. So for instance, it's not Sally from Wrestle Like a Girl going in and teaching in India. We would arbitrarily this hasn't happened yet, but we would say, let's work with the Fogat sisters because they can be able to use their platform. And now they have this positive branding and messaging behind them, mm-hmm. and they can use their influence. So we're very conscientious to promote from within our own sport those girls and women that may or may not have been given as many resources, and really wrapping our brains around how can we make them more powerful so that they can really start to open doors and keep those doors open for the next generation of wrestlers, future leaders, and businesswomen.
Now, Sally, this is the part of the interview where I finally get to ask you something that I've been itching to ask from the beginning, and I told you about that as well earlier before we started recording. So I'm a 26-year-old. I'm 4 feet 11 inches tall. I weigh just about 42 kgs, and I'm a very small girl, as you can imagine. And if I were to approach you or wrestle like a girl, I would be immediately insecure of my small frame and my lack of core strength. So how can a person like me thrive in a wrestling environment?
That is such a good question. And that is the beauty of the sport of wrestling. It doesn't matter how much you weigh, what your skin color is, what your gender is, what your political or religious ideology is. Everyone belongs on a wrestling mat. So for you, you may have nervousness and you might be intimidated before walking through the door. But what we want you to see when you come to our events and to our camps is that it's very female-centric, it's very positive, and you're not going to be wrestling with anyone that weighs 210 pounds. It's a weight class sport. So you're going to be wrestling and training with a like-weight individual. Therefore, your injuries are going to go down and you're going to have more of an opportunity to stay with it because you're going to find that it's going to be enjoyable. So recognizing that we all have different bodies, we all have different frames, we all have different physiques, but everyone still is included in our wrestling room and everyone has a value, everyone has a purpose.
But are there any specific challenges that petite girls face? Like, are they ever at a disadvantage?
The biggest challenge, and it's not from weight classes, because even myself, I'm able to wrestle a heavyweight wrestler and not get injured. What we've found is a little bit more challenging is that the areas of where women tend to bend are different than men. For instance, men don't tend to be as flexible in their lower back, while the female athletes can do back bends, whether they want to or not. So understanding that the hips on women have a different fulcrum and how you bend them is going to make an impact. So it doesn't necessarily go off of weight and size. It just goes off of how people are physiologically built. So some women just have such strong, powerful thighs that we find that we have to be able to expand our clothing so that their thighs fit because they're just built differently than, let's say, a man that tends to have a stronger upper body.
And Sally, so what's the ultimate goal of Wrestle Like a Girl? What was your vision when you started and how far in the process are you achieving the vision you started off with?
Oh, yes. So the initial vision was simply to go and do female-specific, female-centric wrestling camps. And as I started traveling around both the U.S. and the world, I was able to see there were glaring inequalities. And if there's one thing that I'm good at, it's being a combat athlete, it's being a combat veteran, it's that I like to fight. And if I can use my skills and talents and abilities to fight for more women and girls to be able to have the opportunity to participate in not just wrestling, but all sports, then I'll certainly do that. So what initially started as just doing wrestling camps has blossomed into this beautiful advocacy organization where I've found myself speaking in front of the United Nations and different human rights and sporting entities to share the message of why all girls and women should be afforded the opportunity to participate in wrestling in all sports. So how far are we along into it? It's like a ball of yarn. And every time that I think I get one of the knots out, I find that there's a different challenge. And so it's constantly readjusting what the argument is, what the challenge is. And so I see myself doing this job for the foreseeable future. And I'm quite proud to do it because when it comes, and this is what I learned from my own experience being an athlete. If I were to consider myself a coach or as the leader of this organization, my job is to make the lives easier for the girls and women that come after me. Mm-hmm. And if that means I have to stand against the wind, regardless of who I'm talking to, so that no one else has to feel that, then I'm more than willing and I'm absolutely capable of taking that on. So I can't say how much further I have to go, but I'll tell you that people are starting to listen and people are hearing us and there's movements that are happening on a global scale. And we are incredibly proud to do the work that we do.
And I think it might be a little too late to ask you this, but how did you even start off in the beginning? Like, this must have been a tiny idea in the back of your head. How did you execute on it and how did you start off?
I am able to really have some courageous conversations followed by brave actions. Mm-hmm. I was transitioning out of military service. I was going to be retiring as an elite athlete. I knew that I wanted to be involved with women's wrestling, but I was looking around and I didn't see anything that particularly fit how I believed I would be most effective. And because of that, I ended up building my own organization. And the best thing that I had going for me was my naivety and not understanding truly what I was getting into. Essentially, what I did was jump out of an airplane without a parachute and say, I'll figure it out. And fortunately, it's been working out really well. And as you guys know from your podcast, once you find one person that's really good at their craft, they can connect you to other people that are very good at their craft. And so when it comes to yep. Wrestle Like a Girl and how we're operating on a global scale, it is me. And I have a handful of people that are the experts in what they do that are able to give me very powerful and sound advice on how to walk the course of being an advocacy organization, supporting girls and women, both in sport, in life. And it's taken on a whole new trajectory and vision than even I thought. So sometimes people ask me, Sally, are you living your dreams? And the answer to that is no. I thought just like founding Wrestle Like a Girl was going to be my dream. And this is my post career. Where I'm at now is beyond my wildest dreams because I never thought that I would be meeting the former president of Ireland, or I never thought that I would be meeting these figures and heads of state talking about why women deserve an opportunity to participate in sport on a global scale. But for whatever reason, they're letting me come to the table. I'm going to keep coming back to the table and I'm going to keep having those conversations. I'm going to keep being an advocate and I'm going to keep doing what I believe is right, which is putting the girls and women first.
And Sally, to have such a big organization with such big dreams as well, obviously you need funding and you need equipment. So how are you sustaining it at the moment?
We have donations. We have grants that come in from different foundations globally. And then we also have a few different events and fundraisers that we host. So this coming September 14th and 15th here in the state of Colorado in the United States, we're having the first ever Unite and Ignite Sports Women's Power Summit. And we have 15 girls that we're flying in from all over the world. And the theme this year is wrestling with life and winning. So we're going to have some very powerful international female athletes sharing what their story is. And that's going to be a fundraiser for us. But beyond that, it does something else. And that highlights how, depending on where you grow up in the world, you're going to have different challenges and different adversities. And people need to be able to hear those messages so that we can all come together as a collective good. And that is what this summit's really going to help highlight, which is everyone wrestles with life, regardless of where you come from, and we all have to learn how to win.
Mm-hmm. And which all countries have you thought of branching out to? As of now,
we are working with some countries in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. We've had some conversations with India, Brazil. We have an ambassador in Brazil. We have an ambassador that's in Canada, and we have an ambassador in Australia. So as we start to go down our future trajectory, we're going to start implementing our programming in each of these countries. So right now, our curriculum that we have written, we're working on getting it translated into different languages. And then once that happens, we can create a platform, an app, so that it can be more easily not just translated, but accessed by anyone, regardless of where you're at in the world.
Well, but I do hope that you start a center here in the UK, especially in Edinburgh, because you've convinced me that although I'm small and lack core strength, I should maybe try wrestling.
Ankita's got a new career path now.
Yes. Well, and actually, we have one of my advisors for the board, Wrestle Like a Girl, David Guvenberg. He's the CEO of the Commonwealth Games, and he works in the UK. So we have some upcoming programming that we're going to be doing in support of where he lives so that we can really start to maximize our impact. So I do hope to see you.
Wow, that's amazing. Sally, I'm sure there will be a lot of listeners tuning into this episode who'd want to get in touch, and you know, we have our fingers crossed, maybe even help with funding or help Wrestle Like a Girl. So how could they get in touch with you for that?
Yes, anyone can go to our website, wrestlelikeagirl.org. They can always send us an email, info@wrestlelikeagirl.org. And beyond that, we have social media for Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and there is so many different ways to get in touch with us. And we would love to have conversations so that we can understand what the community, what our global community needs. What are some of the challenges that they're running into? Because yes, we want everyone to wrestle. And if you already have the ability, then that's so wonderful. It's the people that are running into challenges. That's where we can really be of use, because we can start to wrap our brains around how to overcome that, whether it's through, if it's a clothing challenge, if it's a cultural challenge, if it's you don't have enough coaches or you need help recruiting, then we can be of service.
That's amazing, Sally. Thank you once again for coming on the show. We had such an amazing time talking to you about this project that you're so passionate about.
Thank you for having me. I do love sharing the joy of wrestling with anyone who will listen. So to everyone that's tuned in and listened for the full duration, I give you many thanks.
Well, Sally, I really hope to see Wrestle Like a Girl branch out in India. And I'm very, very certain that you'll make it there as well. And I really hope that I really wish you the best of luck with everything that you do, because I'm telling Ankita earlier as well, like what you do is like my dream as well, because I'm really into sports and I think you're helping the community through sports, and I think that's just really, really such a beautiful thing. So you've inspired me a lot today as well, Sally, so thank you.
Likewise, thank you both so much for having me.
And thanks as always, dear listeners, for tuning in today. We would be very grateful if while you're stalking Sally and Wrestle Like a Girl on social media, you find us as well and leave us a review on iTunes. We would be very grateful for a 5-star review.
And if you have any ideas on who we should interview or if you have any topics you'd like to discuss, we have some great guests in the past who want to come back on the show as well. So we're more than happy to bring them back and throw them all the questions that you have for us. So until next week, I'm Dr. Viz.
And I'm plain old Ankita.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.